Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
Welcome back, folks, to Through a Scottish Prism. Nice to be speaking to you again. It's been a couple of weeks, actually, since we last spoke. I was in transit last week back from sunny Dubai, and we didn't have a show. So we're now 2 weeks closer to independence, and with all the things that have been happening in this last week or so, we might be even closer than we think. And to discuss all the week's issues and what evidence going on, I'm joined by a dear old friend of mine from Barhead, my dear friend John, who is a heavy campaigner for the cause, as committed as any of us. He has his own business, he is a granddad, he's a brother, he's a husband, he's a friend, he's a good guy. And I'm delighted. I should also say he's also my landlord when I go back to Scotland. So, because he and his darling wife Anne-Marie put me up when I go back. So, John, without further ado, welcome to the show, chap. How are you?
Not bad at all, Rod. Nice to be here. Nice to be speaking to you again.
Yes, indeed. So, anything exciting happening on your end I should know about, or?
Just much the same old stuff, Roddy. You know, just family life, moving house, all that stuff.
I hope my room's ready.
It is indeed.
Because I should have said that, John, you've been to all under one banner, except, I think, Dundee. Was it Dundee or Dunfermline or whatever?
It was Dundee. I didn't get to
Dundee. Yeah, but you're a seasoned campaigner.
Yeah, I had hoped to get to them all this year, but actually Dundee one, I don't know why, but you know, when I was planning it earlier in the year, the Dundee one, I don't think it had been planned, or it had been planned later on or whatever, and when the date came out for it, it was kind of late for me to organise stuff to get there, so I was a wee bit disappointed, but hey,
we'll make up for it. We'll make up for an Edinburgh whole chap.
Aye, absolutely.
I'm more ashamed that I've not made any of them up to now, so this will be my... I'll be a virgin on this trip. But I just hope it's... I don't even know yet. Where is it from? Whereabouts in Edinburgh, from where to where?
Actually, it's from Princes Street Gardens, and it basically goes up and down a few of the streets locally around till it finishes up at the Holyrood Park. So it doesn't look to be... it doesn't look to be a huge distance.
Or strenuous, or too strenuous.
But that's what I was just trying to... I was talking to Anne-Marie about it, and I was saying it goes up the mound. And I'm wondering if it actually goes up the mound or not, because it's quite a hill.
You better get ready for giving me a piggyback, mate.
I booked a couple of rickshaws just in case.
Apparently, it's the Edinburgh AUB is to be over by 5 o'clock, because they said you'll not be staying for your tea. Boom, boom. Thank you.
I'll get my coat.
Yeah. but yes, we'll be going to that. And anyone who's listening in here, I hope you're all going to. I think it's so important, particularly this one, Joanne. They're all important. I think from the start off, from Hands Off Our Parliament, The Hoop, which was fantastic, started the whole ball rolling, and I think was the lighting of the blue touch paper of the Yes movement, which had been in almost in hibernation, and that started it going. But this is the crescendo. I think this is the big one. It's the night before the SNP conference starts, and it's the time to send out a message to the SNP leadership that we're ready. You know, we're just waiting on you.
Yeah, I think I would like to think that this should be, it has all the kind of credentials to be the biggest march that we've had, the biggest show of strength that we've had so far, and I sincerely hope it is, and encourage everybody, anybody who can, to join us on the 6th of October. I'm thinking it'll be a great day, they usually are. And as you say, we've now got, I don't know if you've seen Angus McNeil. I think he was actually on Alex Salmon's show. And he was saying, you know, obviously people are getting restless and stuff. And what he was proposing that the SNP should issue sort of scenarios. So, and you know, we will go for independence and on that day if this scenario arises, and we'll do that if that arises. I don't think I'd necessarily agree with them, but I do think that there needs to be some sense that or some indication that they are listening. Mm. You know.
Well, but my dear friend and Peter Bell, who, as we know, is an absolute uber loyal SNP man like myself, uber loyal. But he expressed after the Spring Conference, and actually got attacked by a lot for it. He expressed that he thought that Nicola and her address to the conference in the Spring didn't sort of pay enough attention, or not attention, didn't highlight enough the hoop, and there already been one or two AUOBs, and didn't say enough about the independence movement. And I think you're possible. I don't think she can ignore it this time. And I did notice, I mean, there was I put out a tweet with one of the things she said, but she was saying the only way to avoid this Brexit is for Scotland to get independence. So she's talking it up, and I think it would be very hard to go to this conference in a fortnight and not say anything and not give us an indication. Without opening your hand too much, I mean, she could say, "Well, we will be having an. It's going to happen. I'm telling you now, ladies and gentlemen. I've given the British government every chance. It's just about timing now."
That's yeah. I think something. To be fair, I think as you know, I've said repeatedly that although Peter and others, including yourself, were calling for a referendum round about this time of year, and I had said that I didn't think it would happen because Nicola had said that she would see what shape it took before. So I never really expected the call for the referendum to come before the conference. I think, though, I could be wrong, it's just my opinion. I think that when Nicola said that, I think she had the conference in mind, because if there hadn't been the delays that there have been with the Brexit negotiations, I think we would have known by now what the deal was supposed to be. So I think going into conference, they would have been, or the SNP would have been expecting at that point to be able to say, this is what we think, you know.
Well, I don't think it's a question. I think we've known for a long while what it's going to be. It was just getting confirmation of what it's going to be. Well, this brings me nicely along to, in the last week, Salzburg in Austria. What a shambles. An absolute, an embarrassment. I mean, if I was a unionist, or if I was someone in England, I would be horrified and embarrassed about what happened over there.
Well, this was always was. I don't understand why everybody's so up in arms, and you know, about the way UK has been treated here. The UK published a white paper. I can't remember what it was called. It was called something about the future relationship between the UK and Europe. And it sets out that there's a foreword by the Prime Minister, which sets out in black and white the fact that the UK is not prepared to accept the four freedoms. Mm-hmm. That white paper should have stopped there. There was no need to say anything after that because it was never going to be accepted. Yeah. So anybody with half a brain knows that what happened in Salzburg was going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, it was inevitable.
Yeah. You know? Well, as you know, we've got another great wee pal, ladies and gentlemen, our friend Frankie. You know, a wee Frankie, way back in November when I did that blog, Two Wee Guys from Pollock.
Yeah.
When they cobbled together the British government allegedly with the EU that they'd come to an agreement on a backstop, a solution to the Northern Ireland problem. Mm. And I remember having a discussion, several discussions with you and your good lady wife and Frankie on this, saying, this sounds absolute nonsense. And this is the one that's coming back again and again and again. And there's solutions to the Irish problem. I don't want to call it an Irish problem, but do you know what I mean? But they're unacceptable solutions for all the different parties. You know, the EU and the Republic and those that voted to remain in Northern Ireland, to remain in the EU, that is, they don't want a hard border.
No.
The hardcore unionist, DUP, knuckle-dragging dinosaurs, they would love to have one of those Donald Trump walls round their six counties, you know, I mean, painted orange, no doubt, as well. So that's unacceptable to that side. To the DUP and the knuckle draggers, they're not willing to accept a border in the North Channel or the Irish Sea, if you prefer. And then the right wing of the Tory party will not accept giving any part of the UK away. So it's an intractable, and we've all known that since the day one. But as you say, the papers and I think ignorance south of the border of Irish politics plays a lot into that. The total disregard for anything in the Celtic fringe, I think, plays into that.
Well, I don't think it's just that the Celtic fringe. I think that's very demonstrable at the moment. But it's the whole Little Englander thing where they think, really? They said no? Did they? Really? You know, say no to the UK?
How dare you?
What's wrong with these people? We'll invade them, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the attitude of it's
arrogance.
It's absolutely arrogance, and the whole basis of the reason that Scotland needs to be taking itself away from that situation, you know.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was, I mean, we were 18, nearly 2 years into the Brexit, you know, after Article 50, when David Davis was still in situ, and he had never been to Northern Ireland to look at the border. And as those of us who are in the know that you can go into a house through the front door, and then you're in Northern Ireland. You go to the back door, you're in the Republic. Mm-hmm. There's 300 border crossings. 20,000 British troops couldn't close that border during the height of the Troubles. So I don't know how they intend to close it now. So it is the rock in which they'll perish. And what no one's mentioning, which I will, because as you know, as folks in my dear friend John knows, I live in Catalonia, part of España, Gibraltar. Now, you're not getting here. I keep looking at, there's nothing getting mentioned in the UK. The Spanish are starting to flex their muscles. They smell blood when it comes to Gibraltar, and they're wanting, at worst, they want joint sovereignty.
Yeah.
And so you could end up with a situation here that'll upset the Jacob Rees-Mogg's and all these other Muppets. But you could end up that Gibraltar, who voted like 98% to remain in the EU, will get staying in the single market and customs union. Northern Ireland, with 57%, might get staying in the single market and the customs union. England and Wales, who voted to leave the single market and customs union, will get that. And Scotland, who 62% voted to remain, will not get that. They've been trying to do that deal. They've said, OK, we'll do a deal in Ireland. We're willing to sacrifice that. But you mustn't give anything to the Scots. They must get nothing. They mustn't be allowed. Appalling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know how much of the, as you know, I don't buy or read newspapers, but every now and again, one is brought to my attention. And of course, you know, there's been a story that's kind of flicks in and out of the news about Theresa May and Davis, etc. Begging the EU leaders not to do anything, which would you know, reflect well on Scotland.
Correct.
You know, it's just, you know, all this partnership of equals.
Yeah. Oh, you always were a comedian, John.
Absolutely. I mean, it shows it for what it is.
Yep.
They want to keep Scotland as a colony.
Yeah,
and they treat it as a colony, and for good reason, for good financial reason.
Oh, for sure.
Despite what they will tell you.
Now, I saw a couple of things again, and we know, you and I have spoken about this, and I've got to tell you, folks, John's the first one to come on to me and tell me when I've done a blog that you missed out an apostrophe or an S there, and that didn't quite happen. You said, and you know I'm not good with numbers, so John keeps me. We have to be right. We have to be absolutely right in everything we do. Unlike the unionist foreknown press and broadcasters. I saw something, I've not had a chance to check on it today. But it came from a fairly reliable source, and I'm going to investigate it. But apparently, allegedly, now I keep saying, stressing this, folks, allegedly, and I believe you in the next week or so, I'll try and confirm it up. Winston Churchill was talking to De Valera during the war and was willing to, you know, unite Ireland, you know, get rid of the six counties and give a united Ireland and return for cooperation from the Republic in the Second World War. Now, I think that's probably credible and believe it is possible. I've never heard it till today, and I only saw it in a quick bit on social media, but I'm going to check that one out. But it wouldn't surprise me. They would sell their granny to fill their own pockets.
No, absolutely. It sounds feasible, but that's that. When you said it now, that's the first time I've heard that. So I wouldn't know whether it was any validity in it or not. But the principle is right. The UK government, these people that are the elites, would absolutely sell anything to anybody if it meant that they had an extra 10 in their pocket, you know.
Correct. And you, as my good old friend John here, confirm, I have been saying for years, long before Brexit, that sooner or later, if it suited London, they would sell out the most British of the British in Northern Ireland if it suited their purpose. And I think it's getting close to that, John, because the intractable problem.
Again, it's one of these allegedlys, Roddy, that I'd actually read a couple of reports that suggested that Theresa May was ready to do that and was basically a DUP put a boot in and threatened to bring down the government if she did it. But that would be, if you believe these reports, then that would be the government's favoured option.
Well, there'll be enough red Tories to make up for this. I'm sure her whips will be talking to the Labour whips and saying, look, we need 20 other MPs to replace these DUPs because they're going to go mental. Because let's be honest, I've tried to find out the difference between a Labour Brexit and a Tory Brexit. They're always going, oh, the Tory Brexit's terrible. Typical Labour stuff. Oh, Tories are terrible. Well, what's your policy? Yes, yes. Red squirrel, yes. Before the many, not the few. Why, what's your policy, though? How does it differ from the Tory one? Yes, you're abusing me now. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff. There is no difference in there. So
no.
I don't think it would be too difficult for the Tory whips to say, well, look, we're about to do this to the old paddies, you know. You know, they're not us. They're not Little Englanders, so we can just stab them in the back. But we need your support to get the old Brexit so we can get rid of Johnny Foreigner. And I think that's very possible. Because that is their problem. Their problem is Ireland, as always. That God bless them.
Well, I mean, I didn't actually read the whole white paper because I couldn't stop laughing after I'd done the first few paragraphs. But if you take Ireland out of the equation and look at some of the, they want to leave the customs union, they want to leave the free trade area, but they still want to have free trade. And this is in the white paper.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how can anybody seriously think that this is a viable solution, you know? So I don't think it's just where Ireland is concerned they've got a problem. I think every area of this, they've got a problem. The problem is that I don't think they care. I think, you know, we know this is shit. You know it's shit. But we'll all be better off as a result. You lot will be worse off. But you don't matter.
Yeah.
No. But we'll make money out of this. No.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I just, what I have read of it, I can't make any sense of. I don't know why. I don't see where anybody can think that any of it's sensible proposals.
Yeah. Well, going back to what you've alluded to. About us being the ones carrying it. It goes back to the crash of 10 years ago. Seem like 10 years, 10 years ago. We've all suffered. We're going to talk about some things on that later, perhaps. Except the bankers haven't suffered. The hedge fund guys haven't. The ones that caused it have not suffered. And with Brexit coming down the line, you know, the Jacob Riggs and the John Redwoods and the Theresa Mays and the Lords and the the elite, the people, you know, the people that back them, we don't ever see, John, the ones that are actually running the country, not the politicians who front it for them. But the ones that, they're not going to be affected, but I tell you what, you, me, and all Jack Thompson's bairns are going to get screwed into the ground. I mean, I'm sitting here, I don't know if I'm perhaps coming back to live permanently in Scotland, because if it all goes wrong and they don't take care of rights and they remove my health care and everything else, I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to have to sell up here and come home, along with 800,000 others that are living in Spain. With
yeah, but if you...
A million and a half in France as well.
You could leave that to one side just for the for a minute, Roddy, and look at just the complete practicality. If you look at, after Theresa May's statement on Salzburg the other day, the pound dropped, I think it was 1.5% against the dollar.
Yep.
Now, even if you are permitted to stay where you are and your healthcare continues, your income will be considerably less.
Yep.
Than it is now if the pound keeps tanking.
Yeah.
You know, so again, directly or indirectly, you pay for this.
Oh, for sure. I mean, as you know, I've been paying for this. We weren't long here until the Brexit bloody vote, and I remember actually talking to you and Anne-Marie the following day. And since that time, our income has dropped by 25%.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to, I mean, there are... You've got, as you say, there's 800,000 people, and they'll all be in the same boat.
Correct.
You know,
so
week on week, their pension becomes worthless because the pound is tanking. And of course, that's all the EU's fault. You know, because the pound's tanking because the EU are bad boys, they're naughty people, and no respect. And of course, the other side of that is, if in my positions in Scotland, obviously running my own business, and you've then, I'm sitting here at this point not knowing whether I'm still going to have a business after March next year, because as you know, a lot of my work is based around the aircraft industry, moving parts of airplanes for various assorted companies. But we've already seen some of these companies moving their to let you understand that it's rather like airplanes are a bit like boats. You know when they fly, the flag, it tells you where they came from. So airplanes are similar. They have to be registered to the country, sort of thing. So whereas Ryanair, for instance, have already moved part of their fleet from Scotland that was originally stationed in Scotland, is now in Lithuania. So they have less planes here, therefore that means that less maintenance is done here, therefore there's a requirement for less parts here. Now, if everybody else goes down that same route, the cake all the time is getting smaller, but you've still got the same amount of people trying to get a slice.
Correct.
So at what point, at some point, somebody's business is going to become no longer viable.
And it's a ripple effect.
Yes.
And if you look at, you're talking on the aircraft industry, which I know you're heavily involved with, is that EasyJet, they've registered now in Austria.
Yes.
And they're a very profitable company, EasyJet.
Mm-hmm.
So that corporation tax is now going to the Austrian Chancellor and not the British Treasury.
Yeah, well,
I always get nervous when I'm talking about Austrians that are chancellors. That makes me a wee bit nervous.
Yeah, I was just actually, I was away in a different tangent. I was just wondering whether or not something that was really profitable would actually pay any corporation tax in Britain.
There is that. But you know, that's as you say, the ripple effect. Someone in a similar business to you, I was listening to on the James O'Brien show on LBC. Who delivers parts for engine production in Dagenham, at the Ford plant that used to build cars but now just does engines, and they drive every day. He's sending cars across the channel to pick up different parts to come to build these engines because everything's just in time manufacturing.
Yeah,
and with the possible delays and all the stuff that's going to go on, he figures he'll be out of business within 3 weeks of. The Brexit, but more important than that, he said Ford, they'll get to the stage where, well, this is too difficult to make our engines here, But if I go to Lithuania, Poland, Estonia, Latvia, or any one of the 27 countries, boom, Bob's your uncle.
No, absolutely, they will. And as you probably know, apart from the aircraft industry, everything else that we do is or almost everything else that we do is related to imports or exports. You know, the problem will be that if Mr. Smith, who runs his business, can't get his parts in time, he'll move his business.
Yeah.
Or die. You know, you see, you either the business either dies or you move it to where you can get the people, the goods that it requires. So the obvious thing, and we said this before, I mean, I could quite, with the business that I have, I could physically lift the business and operate it currently from anywhere in the EU.
Hey,
after now, Brexit, I can't.
Right, folks, could you go up on the kettle for a second? I need to have a wee talk with my pal John here. Listen, John, how do you fancy Catalonia?
Hey, the thing is that after March, I might not be able to provide an income, so you might need to keep me.
We can come to an arrangement. We can get it sorted, mate. That'd be good. Anyway, right, you can come back, folks. You can take the kettle off. No, but it is. It's a worry. But it's not just beyond that, John. You're joking apart, because it's not just Mr. Smith's business that moves to Lithuania or Catalonia. But then we Mary's van that does the bacon rolls and the rolls and sausage, they're going to have to close down because there's no one to sell those rolls and sausages to. And Morton's, who make the rolls, and the butcher that makes the sausages, it's got the ripple effect.
It's huge. Yeah. You know, the implications of, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a large business. I'll give you a good example. In an industrial estate that I just moved out of, as you know, I just moved from Lanarkshire to Renfrewshire. There is various assorted small companies, and nobody employs more than 5 or 6 people, except for one business there. And that one business went on holiday for a fortnight. The place shut down for a fortnight. And the woman who runs the snack van in the estate decided there was no point in opening up. She shut hers down for a fortnight.
Right.
Now, that tells you a story, because if these people are not going to be there, if that business shuts down, then it's not viable for her to operate there anymore. Exactly what you're saying, then the cash and carry loses business. Mm-hmm. The people that she employs to serve people their rolls and sausages then don't have. So we've now got more people on benefits, so therefore the local economy suffers. It's a huge knock-on effect.
Correct. But the ones who do not get affected are people like the Jacob Reed Mosses and the rest of them. They're not going to be affected one iota. And I've had this discussion before, probably yourself as well, is that 95%, is it all right for the political anoraks like you and me? We're following it, we're trying to keep up to date. But I figure at the moment that 95% of the UK population are totally oblivious, because our fourth estate, or as you know, I prefer to call them the fifth column, are not informing them. They don't know the disaster's coming down the line.
I think that's I think
almost
they've
criminal,
given up.
Almost criminal.
Yeah, I think they've given up any pretense of even trying to report the news. It's pure propaganda, and they don't even try to hide it anymore. And obviously, it's a wee bit different in Scotland in general, is very much more politically awake and engaged than the rest of the UK, but they will gradually become more engaged. The problem is it might be too late for them when they do. You know, the decision.